What's that noise?
That, my friend, is the sound of the books closing on another election night. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. This week on State Street, we're giving you the lowdown on who won in Utah's biggest primary races.
Plus, what do the candidates moving forward show us about the state of Utah's Republican Party?
Especially as we look to young people and the future.
Let's start off with two of the biggest races of the night. That's governor and U.S. Senate.
First up, governor. The race saw convention pick and more far-right representative Phil Lyman challenging incumbent governor Spencer Cox.
Lyman pushed Cox on issues like immigration, LGBTQ rights, and foreign influence in Utah. But the June 11th primary debate was kind of tame, to be honest.
Not the fault of our executive producer, Caroline Ballard, who happened to moderate that debate. We are super biased, but the candidates actually said she did a great job.
But they didn't actually come off that different, save for a few key issues like support for bringing the Olympics back to Utah and whether new pro sports stadiums are a good idea.
Also interesting, according to pollster Noble Predictive Insights, Lyman ended up closing some of an earlier gap and had momentum on his side. The week before Election Day, Lyman had 42% support from likely Republican voters. Cox had 55%.
But in the end, it was Cox who pulled out a big W. And the final numbers weren't so different from that poll.
We have an incredible state. We are so lucky to be able to serve in these positions over the past 4 years. And we're really excited to get ready for November.
I was at Cox's watch party in downtown Salt Lake. People were, naturally, pretty happy, and I got a genuine feeling that Utah Republicans were turning a page in some ways. The whole tone from Cox's critics has been pretty loud and mean in this race, but the vibes were super upbeat and positive at campaign headquarters. And I gotta say, for anyone listening who's a West Wing fan, I think Cox had a napkin moment last night. In other words, someone might see him and think, maybe Mr. Cox should move to Washington.
This is who Utah is. This is who we've always been. And in Utah, we're the anchor. We're the last best hope of this nation to say that's not who we are. We are better than that. And so now Utah finds ourselves at the front. We didn't ask for this. This isn't what we wanted to do, but somebody has to do it. Somebody has to stand up and tell our nation that there is something better. We don't have to do this anymore. We can fight about ideas. We can have elections. We can have a battle of ideas. But at the end of the day, we have to respect the results of those elections, and then we have to work to make our country better, no matter who wins. And that's what we're going to do.
Cox for America. Check back with us in 4 years.
Brigham Young University poli sci professor Michael Barber says governors are pretty hard to beat right now.
You just have to kind of start out with the understanding that somehow governors have managed to kind of break away or make themselves different from national politics.
To put it simply, people like them. Cox ranked as the second most liked governor in the nation in 2023.
In the meantime, Lyman says he will not concede the race until the votes are verified. That will happen at the final county-level canvass on July 9th.
But Lyman also alluded to a possible lawsuit in the works. He told a crowd of supporters at his election party that he believes since he won the convention vote, he should be on the general election ballot.
The Constitution of Utah says that a person who gets over 60% in convention is automatically put on the general ballot.
We made some calls, did some research, and confirmed it is not in the Utah Constitution. Utah state code states that the winner of the primary election is the party nominee.
But the Utah Republican Party Constitution does say that a convention candidate that secured 60% or more of the vote, quote, shall proceed to the general election, which Lyman did get. We're going to let the courts figure that one out.
Okay, moving on to the second big race, U.S. Senate.
Congressman John Curtis wins. He beat out Trump-endorsed Trent Staggs, former Utah Speaker of the House Brad Wilson, and Provo businessman Jason Walton. It was a stacked race, but Curtis came out blazing. A landslide victory, they call it. He got over 50% of the vote in a four-way race.
The Associated Press called the Senate race roughly 20 minutes after polls closed.
And interestingly enough, both Lyman and Staggs were party choices at convention, and they both lost by pretty significant margins.
Curtis is viewed as the moderate conservative candidate. He's been compared to Mitt Romney more than Mike Lee.
But at his election party, Curtis pushed back against the claims that he's similar to either.
If you expect me to be Mitt Romney, I'm going to disappoint you. If you expect me to be Mike Lee, I'm going to disappoint you. I'm John Curtis, and I think it's just fair to say I'm really different than both of them.
I was at the Salt Lake County GOP watch party on election night. Staggs was there. Before polls closed, he was chatting and taking photos with supporters. But once the race was called, Staggs quietly slipped out of the building. He didn't address the small crowd or speak with reporters. I saw and spoke with one of his campaign aides, and he was breaking down a table covered with Staggs campaign signs. As of this recording, Staggs has not conceded the race.
But what does it mean, Sage? What does it mean? And where are the youths this primary election?
We'll find out after this break.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
Every weekday, KUER brings you fresh coverage of local stories breaking and developing across Utah. Utah News Now is a podcast that publishes twice a day, Monday through Friday. It has all the latest headlines and stories from KUER's newsroom. Find the latest episode of Utah News Now at KUER.org or wherever you download and listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. So we've got a lot of information buzzing around. To help sort through it all, we called up Leah Murray.
Leah is great, first off. Even though she was on vacation, she still took our call. She's also a poli-sci professor at Weber State University and the director of the Walker Institute of Politics and Public Service.
So in addition to knowing a ton about national and Utah politics, she also knows a thing or two about how young people are thinking about all of it.
She told me there seems to be a disconnect between the party picks and registered Republicans as a whole in Utah. Many convention party picks did not win, and it wasn't even that close.
I'm not surprised convention winners lost. I am surprised by how much they lost. So it's not really what's surprising to me, Sage, but the interesting question is disconnect between convention delegates and who all they are choosing at the primary. So then a little bit, I'm really intrigued, Sage, by like, who are the Republicans in the state of Utah?
Yeah.
The primary voters feel very different from our delegates. I feel like probably that's always been developing, right, over the last decade as we've had signature gathering. But I think this election really shows, the gap between them, the distance between them.
So what do you think that means for the convention system and its gauge of Utah voters?
First of all, if you are getting onto the ballot via a signature gathering route, what you are doing is a ton of canvassing just to get on the ballot. And political science research would tell you canvassing is the best way to mobilize voters. It is the most expensive way, right? Like it's very easy to send like an email blast, right? Or a text. That's not a high labor cost. Canvassing is a lot of work. It's a high labor cost, but hands down, it is the best way to get people involved in politics, to get them out to the polls. So what does that mean for the convention system? So let's go pick on the attorney general, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So at the convention, Derrick Brown did not come out of convention. In fact, he was in third place and they bounced him. And part of the reason when I would ask people, because I was like, Derrick Brown used to be the GOP party chair. Like, why would he not be a choice out of convention? And the answer was, there's a litmus test that if you gather signatures, convention delegates are mad at you and they're never going to pick you. So Derrick Brown might be a good test case for this. He had a Mike Lee endorsement. He's clearly a Republican. what's going to have to happen is convention goers have to stop seeing signature gathering as a litmus test as something wrong and more as an excellent skill in a tool belt for winning the election going on.
And so what do you think this also tells you about the divide between the Republican electorate?
Many Republicans in this country went the route of being devotees of the former president, Donald Trump. And then we have an example in our own Senator Mitt Romney of what you could do as a Republican who's not MAGA. And then, you know, Trump calls them rhinos, Republicans in name only. But I would argue those are Republicans in identity and in thought and not just in name only. Does that make sense? Right. Like, so there are a lot of Republicans who are kind of frustrated with where the Republican Party writ large nationally is going. What I think is interesting in these results is our MAGA candidates don't always do really well. So given a choice, our voters in the primary were choosing Republicans that are kind of classic Republicans, conservatives long before Donald Trump was ever in politics. They are a little, you know, there was an article in the Des News about they're homeless. This idea that people who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, like the National Republican Party, is maybe not resonating with them. And so I actually think the convention goers maybe have been more reflective of our MAGA Republican base. And then the primary voters are just not there. And those numbers overwhelmingly in the primary elections, what we're having is the more classic style Republican.
One of the big struggles that the Utah Republican Party is having is mobilizing young voters. And that's a base that they definitely need if they want to continue to grow their influence in the state. So what does this election mean for young people?
I am not sure that any young voters, Sage, are paying attention, which as a college professor is a horrible thing for me to say out loud. I am not sure that they were fully engaged in this primary at all. I think probably this primary was more about our older voters, but I haven't seen data on that. But that's not a problem for Republicans, right? That's a problem writ large in the system where young people, you know, like think about any of the candidates that we've had. They're not really talking about issues that I think young people are resonating with right now. So let's go on the left side of it. It is the case that young voters feel like answers to what's happening in Gaza is maybe not the right answer. Over on the right side, I think young voters think Republicans might be off the mark a little bit with some of their LGBTQ messaging in their leadership, saying things that young people on both sides, you know, they don't think that's the most important issue. But I think they are feeling candidates are too old, right? Like I'm not even sure they show up in November, right? We've got an 81-year-old grandpa and a 77-year-old grandpa on the ballot. And I think young voters probably are not super impressed with either of those choices. Both parties, and I would argue all of our elected officials, have a lot of work to do to make young people feel like they're part of it. But then like the chicken and egg on that, right, Sage, is because they're not showing up, that's why no one's talking to them. Why, if I'm an elected official, would I campaign to people who don't show up? If young voters want the system, if you will, the institutions to answer them, they've got to start being part of the electorate to put some pressure on that system.
What do you think these results mean for where Utah goes in the general election on November 5th?
I think we will elect all of our Republicans in November, as we always do. Look, the deal is like there's, you know, almost just shy of 2 million voters in the state, and just shy of 1 million of those are Republican registered voters, right? And so generally what we know about behavior is if you are Republican, right, you are going to vote Republican. So even if you don't like Donald Trump, you are going to, you're not voting for Joe Biden, so you will hold your nose and vote for Donald Trump, or you'll turn the page and ignore that part of the ballot, right? And just go to the governor and start voting at the governor. So I fully expect a Republican sweep in November.
Okay, Leah, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time when you are on vacation in New York State visiting your fam bam.
I'm never on vacation for you, Sage Miller.
Oh,
anytime you need me.
My heart just fluttered.
That was Leah Murray, a political science professor at Weber State University.
We focused a lot on Republicans this season, but there were some interesting Democratic races, too.
Salt Lake City Representative Joel Briscoe was ousted by challenger Grant Miller.
And Natalie Pinckney, a South Salt Lake councilor, ran away with the nomination for an at-large county council seat. That will be a race to watch in November.
One thing we do want to point out is that Democrats elected young, diverse candidates across the board. These are candidates that look a lot more like the younger generations we've been talking about.
And researcher and pollster Melissa Deckman spoke to those shifting demographics earlier this season.
Grant Miller, younger than Joel Briscoe. He's also Palestinian. Natalie Pinckney, a young Black leader in her community. And the victor in House District 23 was Hoang Nguyen. She's an entrepreneur, Vietnamese, and a refugee.
On the Republican side, mostly white, mostly male.
This brings us to November's general election. We already know Utah is a red state, and Democrats have a steep hill to climb in races like governor and Senate.
But the question remains, how will Trump fare this year? And will it make a difference here in Utah? That does it for this season of State Street. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins.
We want to know what's on your mind as we plan next season of State Street. Let us know.
We've also got a summer newsroom series in the works all about renting housing in Utah.
We have a handy comment box on our website. What questions do you want us to answer about the renting process? Drop us a line and it might become a KUER story.
We also have a couple of special thank yous because we couldn't be everything everywhere all at once. KUER's Tilda Wilson went to Curtis's watch party to gather tape for us. Thank you, Tilda.
And KUER was not at Lyman's watch party, but Utah News Dispatch reporter Alex L. Cabrera was. She was kind enough to share her audio with us. Thank you, bestie.
A lot of work happens behind the scenes to make State Street possible. A huge thank you to our digital team of Jim Hill, Raquel Davis, and Eleanor Gomberg.
Editing and production work is by David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark.
Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
And with that, we're outy scouties for the season.
Were you going to sneeze?
No, I quit breathing for a second, so it was a big gasp of air. I'm sorry. It was just a reminder to inhale.
I forgot to breathe for a second.
From KUER.